afternoon. I'm your host, Juliana Kedzer-Kaminsky.
And I'm Nick Wapachi. Here are the headlines today.
To game or not to game? That is the question.
And let's get bubbly for Buble. The Junos are finally here.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook. What have you done?
We've got a great show lined up for you.
Over 50 million Facebook profiles. The data breach has users questioning whether or not to delete their account. Here's Marianne Einassi with more.
For many people, hearing that Facebook has been leaking their personal information isn't new. Over 50 million Facebook profiles were illegally used by a third-party application, Cambridge Analytica, in 2015. Ryerson student Stephanie Murata lost faith in the website years ago.
So I did stop using it, but I do think that this data breach, I do think that Facebook needs to be more strictly regulated, and I think that they need to start taking responsibility for the things that they allow to happen on their platform, and they haven't been doing that. So as a company, I certainly don't respect them.
Despite Facebook knowing about the breach for years, users are just finding out about this now. Social media expert and Ryerson professor Gavin Adamson says that's the part that does the most damage.
They admit that they knew about this, but they didn't act on it for 2 years plus. So I think that's really where I think the blame can be laid right at Zuckerberg's feet.
Adamson also believes it's going to be hard to boycott Facebook completely.
I've heard it said that Facebook has now become almost like a utility. It's like saying I'm no longer going to be listed in the phone book if you pull off of Facebook.
Mistakes and all, this likely isn't the end of Facebook. It could just be a major bump in the road. For RSJ Radio, I'm Marianne Iannassi.
Facebook should change its status to it's complicated. Peter Ash gets into why it's complicated and why he's mad at the social media service.
I've been using Facebook ever since I was 13 years old, and for the most part, it hasn't let me down. I use it to network, get my news, and sometimes, I even play games on it. But after the security scandal reports came out, I've been debating on whether I should even have an account anymore. I'm not even sure if I'm one of the 50 million accounts affected in a data breach, and there's a good chance I'll probably never know. A second-class apology from Mark Zuckerberg isn't going to cut it for me. I need much more than that. I need Zuckerberg and the rest of the executives to open their eyes and create a security system that'll prevent this from ever happening again. Until that is done, I think it's safe to say that the platform can't be trusted. There's no more time to deflect. Facebook, it's time to wake up. For RSJ Radio, I'm Peter Ash.
The Ontario government has promised $2.1 billion in mental health funding. This money will be used to rebuild the province's mental health system over the next 4 years. Premier Kathleen Wynne says the money will make services more accessible. This announcement also means that every high school will have an additional mental health worker available. Wynne says this plan would strengthen youth access to therapy and counseling in Ontario.
Police identified two suspects who attacked a man with autism Tuesday night at the Square One bus terminal. The 29-year-old was treated for cuts and a broken nose. A video released showed the victims lacing his rollerblades when three men approached. They punched him in the face for about 10 seconds. The police described the three men as South Asian males with a light medium complexion.
Toronto's Church and Wellesley neighborhood is still shaken up following the arrest of alleged serial killer Bruce MacArthur. Members of the LGBTQ community gathered to discuss ways these situations can be prevented in the future. Philip Zikich has the story.
Toronto's LGBTQ community is calling for reconciliation with the police. Toronto police have been scrutinized about their investigation approach of alleged serial killer Bruce MacArthur. An advocacy group held a press conference this morning at a community center in the Church and Wellesley neighborhood. They called for an immediate, independent, and public inquiry into the missing and murdered people from the village. James Dubrow is a crime writer and longtime member of Toronto's gay community. He said Toronto Police Chief Mark Saunders needs to reach out to them. Trans rights activist Susan Gapka said that the issue lies not only with police, but on a larger, more institutional scale.
There's intensification downtown. There's less social services, 10 years of an unfriendly government, the opioid crisis, the homelessness. We have people on the streets desperate. And having police chase them, probably not so much a good idea, but people do want to feel safe.
Following the press conference, a group of LGBTQ community members rallied outside Toronto Police Headquarters. The group was protesting, calling for Saunders' resignation. For RSJ Radio, I'm Philip Zikic.
The TTC has approved the discounted Metro Pass for full-time post-secondary students. The Universal Pass, commonly known as the U-Pass, will give students unlimited access to the TTC during the school year. The Ryerson Students Union will have to hold a referendum to make the pass a reality. Students would have to pay an additional $280 every semester, working out to $70 a month. This is less than the current post-secondary Metro Pass price.
It's World Water Day, and Ryerson is celebrating. Ryerson students learn about the importance of water consumption. RSJ reporter Yumi Kim has the story.
Hey, do you want to come and learn about your water consumption? See how much water that you use in a day?
It's World Water Day. People who work at Ryerson that are responsible for building sustainability celebrate World Water Day at the SLC. Students consume coffee, tea, and other beverages daily, but are they aware of their water consumption? Chantal Guber, one of the event organizers, says this event is to educate people about how much water is being used on a daily basis.
We're here trying to educate people on how much their footprint is. The water footprint that you have isn't just the water that you drink in a day. It's built into all of your purchases. It's built into everything you eat, your technology. So we're trying to kind of communicate to people and educate about how much water that they use.
Anna Granovsky, one of the student participants, shared what she has learned through the event.
Mostly just like matching the big digit numbers with just everyday things can kind of makes you think a little bit more about how much water we end up using for things that don't really require water use.
Another student participant, Hala Mian, says the event is very interactive and educational.
I think it's amazing. I think it's very informative too. And I mean, I actually didn't know that it's International Water Day. And I think that it was a very cool and informative and interactive way to quickly get that information out to students walking by. I've learned about how much water is consumed through the everyday products that we use or eat. So I think I'm going to be more aware of what I'm consuming and what I'm using and what I'm eating.
They're looking forward to hosting the event every year. For RSJ Radio, I'm Yumi Kim.
The Senate of Canada will be voting on the government's cannabis bill, C-45, today. If the government doesn't secure enough votes, the legislation will be dead. This means the government would have to restart the entire legislative process in the House of Commons. This would make Prime Minister Justin Trudeau's plan for legalization of marijuana by the summer very unlikely. Reconciliation is a big topic in Canada, and there are concerns following the Colton Boshi and Tina Fontaine verdicts. Juliana Ketsior-Kaminsky has this report.
Being there with all these strong other, with my mom beside me, with all these other strong Indigenous women beside me, and then just hearing that song, you know, in our culture, the drum, is supposed to represent the heartbeat. So just seeing all those people and, you know, the round dance taking up all of Nathan Phillips Square and those songs, you know, it was just such a beautiful thing to be there.
Madison R. Scott is only 16 years old, but her age didn't stop her from organizing the Justice for Tina Fontaine rally on March 3rd at Nathan Phillips Square. She wanted justice, and she wanted it now.
It was surreal, honestly, like just thinking like those all those thousands of people got together and like I was the key person behind it, like so many people helped me out, but like I started that and like seeing it go from one person to looking into a crowd full of people so far I couldn't see. It was just amazing, you know, like it really gave me hope for the future. People from all different backgrounds, all different levels of experience. I don't know if it was because of a good cause or because I'm so young, maybe both, who knows. People were just so willing and eager to help me out. And there was a lot of passion that got put into it from both the Indigenous community and the non-Indigenous community, and it was really amazing to see that.
Indigenous and non-Indigenous people rallied against the judicial system that acquitted Raymond Cormier in the murder of Tina Fontaine.
I couldn't stop crying for hours. I was scared. I was terrified. I was angry, first and foremost. I don't know. It was just an unexplainable feeling.
Tina Fontaine's body was found in the Red River in Winnipeg back in 2014. She was wrapped in a duvet cover and weighed down by rocks. She was 15 years old. A few weeks before the Fontaine verdict, Gerald Stanley was found not guilty in the murder of Colton Bushy. Defense found there was no evidence that Stanley intentionally killed Bushy. An all-white jury claimed it to be a freak accident.
Justice for Colton! Justice for Colton!
On August 9th, 2016, a 22-year-old Indigenous man was shot and killed on a farm in rural
Saskatchewan. A 12-person jury last month in the shooting death of Bushy, a 22-year-old from the Red Pheasant First Nation.
The jury has found the man accused of killing 15-year-old Tina Fontaine not guilty of second-degree murder. Now, 56.
But what about reconciliation with the judicial system that has failed Indigenous people time and time again? Is there still hope for reconciliation in Canada? Well, according to Max Findey, the executive director of the Canadian Roots Exchange, a program which brings Indigenous and non-Indigenous people together to rebuild that reconciliation, says that he still has hope.
If I didn't believe that, there'd be no reason to keep going. I believe that Canadians are beginning to understand the injustices that exist in this country, that maybe we aren't, the good country, you know, that we think, we like to think that we are, that we were taught in schools, that we are this great defender of human rights on the international stage. I think Canadians are starting to realize that we have third world conditions.
But to Findey, the trials were more than just trials. They were a reflection on his own life with reconciliation and what it meant to him.
When I heard the verdict, I was extraordinarily disappointed, and not only in the justice system, but also in myself. I allowed myself to think that justice could be served, that the facts weren't any clearer, that it was clear to me that this farmer, Mr. Stanley, had ended Mr. Bushy's life. Back at home in Saskatchewan, and I learned of the verdict, I felt foolish that I believed that these institutions, which have not been serving Indigenous people for 150 years, they continue not to serve Indigenous people today. They continue to have deep-seated racism and prejudice and allow injustice to continue to occur against my people. And I felt a little foolish that I thought it could be any different.
Reconciliation is a big topic in Canada, yet our judicial systems are oppressive. That's what Shin E. Mai, a professor at the Osgoode Hall Law School, says.
What shocked me was sort of the process, and especially the jury process in the Colton Bushy case, where basically, you know, the system is set up so you can have an all-white jury, and that's just wrong. And our system needs to be legitimate for everybody, because otherwise it just becomes a system of oppression. And so that's the problem with a system that allows a white defendant to get an all-white jury. An elder says, well, if it takes you 5 days to walk into your trap line, how many days does it take to walk out? It takes you 5 days to walk out. And so for looking at, you know, 100, 200 years of oppression, you can't expect that you're going to walk out of it, you know, in 1 year. Or you're going to do one thing, or you're going to have one policy.
And they told me the same thing, Akamemo, in Cree. It means to persevere. It means to keep going.
What is reconciliation? Like, what is true reconciliation? What does that look like? Who knows? You know, we all have to answer that within ourselves. You know, it starts with us, starts with each and every one of us.
This song is a strong women's song, which brings strength to all women. It was sung at the Justice for Tina Fontaine rally. From the Dish with One Spoon territory and for RSJ Radio, I'm Juliana Kedzier-Kaminsky. Who are you? I am Ryerson. Ryerson Athletics has started a campaign called I Am Ryerson. Its goal is to raise funds to send kids to summer camps at Ryerson. Nicholas DeCunha has the story.
Wear your pride and send a kid to camp. The Mamie Athletic Center is usually home to Ryerson's top athletes, but in the summer, it's taken over by kids. Each summer, Ryerson Athletics runs summer camps for up to 3,000 kids. This year, Ryerson is looking to give 100 children from priority neighborhoods a chance to attend camp. This is being done through the I Am Ryerson campaign. Jeff Giles is Director of Business Development for the Athletics Department. He says this is a chance for Ryerson to impact the community.
The goal of it was twofold. Number one is, as part of Ryerson Rams Care, one of our initiatives is to send kids to camp at Ryerson camps. And so that did that by selling merchandise and getting sponsors and donors to support it. And number two, it increased the profile of Ryerson Rams Care so that we can hopefully generate more revenue and do more good things in the community.
Only 4 days into the campaign, Giles says they're well on their way to reaching their goal.
We've had donors who have donated quite a bit of money to us. We've sold enough apparel so far, so we're happy. Our goal is to send 100 kids to camp. At this point in time, I'd say we've got enough revenue to do 75 of them, and we'll keep going and see what happens.
The campaign is selling Ryerson apparel to help send the kids to camp. For RSJ Radio, I'm Nicholas DeCunha.
Imagine having to wear a clear backpack and an identification badge to school every day. This is the case for students at the Parkland, Florida High School, where 17 people were shot and killed last month. The school sent out a letter to parents about the security changes. The letter says backpacks will be given to students for free when they return to school on April 2nd. Metal detectors may soon be installed at the school. Students say it does nothing to tackle the issue of gun control.
In California, police officers shot and killed an unarmed black man in his grandmother's backyard. Officers were responding to calls of a man breaking windows. Stephen Clark was shot 20 times after officers thought that he had a gun in his hand. It was his white iPhone.
In other international news, an explosion rocked a chemical factory this morning in Czech Republic, killing 6 people and injuring 2. Unipetrol, a Czech oil processor and plastics processor, said the blast took place inside one of the storage tanks. The explosion occurred 16 kilometers north of the capital, Prague. The cause of the explosion is unknown.
The North American Free Trade Agreement talks are veering into the world's most pressing issue, fighting obesity. The Trump administration is using these trade talks with Mexico and Canada to try and limit the ability to warn consumers about the dangers of junk food. Their position may help relieve pressure from American manufacturers to include clearer labels on their products. Health officials worry that it could delay efforts to contain obesity.
Balancing schoolwork with your social life is always difficult. But what happens when you throw competitive gaming into the mix? Jasmine Bala has the story.
Welcome to Summoner's Rift.
These are the sounds of popular online multiplayer video game League of Legends.
30 seconds. I think I can poke him. I think I can whittle him down.
I'll
just poke him. We don't have to all.
And that's Ryerson's League of Legends esports team strategizing during a game. The team ended their season earlier this month. They qualified for playoffs with 5 wins and 1 loss. But they lost in their first playoffs match against Waterloo. Team captain Usama Nyamatela says they lost because they were having an off day.
That's the perfect storm. That's how we lost to Waterloo. Everybody had no practice because we were all studying for our midterms. And I don't really think nobody's going to take a game that's not worth much compared to a midterm, right? So everybody was studying instead of practicing.
That's exactly what teammate Talon Dadwal was doing in the weeks leading up to the playoff game.
Before that game, like leading up to it, I had probably played the least games out of all of us. I had midterms just assaulting me. So I was just like, forget it, forget league for these 2 weeks. I think I still played pretty well in the end, but I had to focus on other stuff during that time.
The team played 3 times a week during their season. They practiced on 2 days and had a game on the 3rd day. Each week, they practiced for about 13 hours.
We have our side lanes pushing, it's fine.
I win that, let's go!
No
Tristan
T, no Galio.
They're on the side, they're on the side.
Balancing schoolwork with practices can be tough for these student athletes. But they do have some strategies to deal with it.
So when a game's closer, when a game's approaching, I would practice more during those times than study. And then when there's like nothing coming up, I'd study more than I'd practice. Well, you have to give up something for it, right? Like I basically gave up all my other hobbies for the most part. I don't play league recreationally with friends anymore. I stopped going to the gym less as well when the season started. Yeah, you basically have to give up a lot of time. I didn't cut any time from my competitive league and my studying. I just cut time from other things.
Team manager Judy Ngo says she tries to make it easier on her players by planning practices around their schedules.
So how I originally planned out their schedule is like I actually asked them for their schedules so that I see, okay, which nights are the most, like, where all of them, like, on the team that they can actually play and practice. And of course, if they can't play, they will notify me and then I'll try to get some, like, a substitute for them or reschedule to accommodate them as much as they can. Or if necessary, even cancel, like, a practice so that it works for them.
Another thing the manager does to make it easier for players is having practices online instead of on campus.
They're all coming from different areas, just to put that into perspective. So getting them to all come like downtown to spend that money to come and meet and play, that's too much of a hassle. So I wanted to make that flexible for them to be like, okay, you guys can play at the comfort of your home, which you're supposed to. As long as you guys can like meet up online, that's better than nothing. And also since Discord allows you to have voice calls, it makes it a lot easier to communicate as well.
So all that's left is
top in AD, man.
All right,
this ability to practice online is one difference in the training of physical sports athletes and esports athletes.
I think they might have it harder because for us at least, right, we have like the comfort of our homes to play the games at, whereas as an athlete, they have to go, like, let's say if you're a swimmer or something, right? You have to go when the pool is open and whatnot. You have to, like, take time out of your day. Well, we can just do everything we want from home, right? Like, maybe we have to rendezvous, but, like with a team and everything, but we can still play solo queue and stuff like that, play by ourselves.
The divide between esports and physical sports is quite clear, as some people still do not consider gaming a sport.
Is in its infancy, right? It's obviously going to be taken less serious than somebody playing basketball professionally. It's not the same, it's like not even close right now. But I think in the future, they might be more equal.
Although esports athletes may not be taken as seriously, the pressures they face are quite similar, especially when it comes to balancing schoolwork with game practice. The Ryerson League of Legends team season might be over, but they aren't done just yet. They plan to train hard and come back even stronger next year. For RSJ Radio, I'm Jasmine Bala.
Victory!
Near, far, wherever you are, our hearts will go on for Celine Dion. The Quebec pop star has announced that she has a hearing condition and needs surgery. She has canceled her shows between March 27th and April 18th as a result. Dion also had to cancel various shows in Las Vegas in January due to a lingering cold. She posted a statement on Facebook saying, "My luck hasn't been very good lately." Dion is now expected to resume performing on May 22nd.
The wait is finally over for fans as the hit reality show RuPaul's Drag Race's new season premieres tonight. The show features a cast of 14 drag queens competing for the title of America's Next Drag Superstar. Those in Toronto's Church and Wellesley Village are more than ready for the fashion and lip-syncing. Alexia Del Piore has more.
The Lodge is a bar in Toronto's Church and Wellesley Village. Many people who come here are fans of RuPaul's Drag Race. That's why, for the last 5 years, The Lodge broadcasts the show on their large screen. RuPaul is one of the most known drag queens in history. Drag is an art form where a man dresses up in woman's clothing and wears eccentric makeup. Jamie Swanton, manager at The Lodge, says that RuPaul's Drag Race has a positive impact on Toronto's LGBTQ community.
Such a positive thing for the community because it's showcasing the talent and just the amazing people that, you know, can come out, and be queens. It's really important for this upcoming generation to know that it is acceptable and it is something that they can achieve or strive for.
Julia Lloyd, a fan of RuPaul's Drag Race, says the show allows people to embrace who they are.
It's real and it's raw, and these like men who dress up as women, like, they truly embody like what I want to be as a feminine woman, as strong and like independent and like fun and exciting. It's kind of creating this idea that you can be whoever you want to be. Like, you don't have to be your gender, you don't have to be a gender that's assigned to you.
Catch season 10 of RuPaul's Drag Race premiering tonight at 8 p.m. on OutTV. For RSJ Radio, I'm Alexia Del Priori.
Vancouver is gearing up to host its fourth Juno Awards this Sunday. British Columbia-born singer Michael Bublé will be hosting the event. He was unable to host the Junos last year in Ottawa due to his son's illness. There will also be a tribute to the late Gord Downie. Headley will not be taking the Juno stage this year. This comes after sexual misconduct allegations against lead singer Jacob Hogard.
Well, that's the end of our show for today.
Thank you so much for listening.
For RSJ Radio, I'm your host, Nick Wapachi.
And I'm Juliana Kedzier-Kaminsky.
Until next week,
have a wonderful day.